The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. Drought, famine, starvation, possible food wars are the greatest problems facing mankind today, paling every other problem into complete insignificance. It doesn't matter whether you talk about mounting crime, or the war in Vietnam, or the race to conquer the moon, or the arms race, or the deepening sociological problems within nations, it doesn't matter which problem you refer to, mass starvation is now the biggest and the most poignant problem that is facing mankind. I've been telling you in recent programs about the fantastic drought and famine that is right now affecting India, about the loss of crops there, about the fact that 50% of all they produce each year is destroyed because of poor procedures in trying to store it, and also because of a fantastic rodent and insect population. And now the United States is sending one-third of all of our wheat to try to feed starving Indians. Well, we've been assuming that the United States and the British Commonwealth will be able to stave off growing drought in other parts of the world, Asia, India, Latin America, perhaps Africa. But now as it's becoming more and more painfully apparent, our peoples are beginning to be afflicted by those same conditions more and more. Now why? Here we are living in a world where your daily news talks of wars and rumors of other wars, where you hear of fantastic upsets in the weather, mounting fear of famine and resultant starvation, and always, of course, the disease epidemics that follow along. Is there then any connection between these major events of today and what was pronounced centuries ago by a man named Jesus Christ, one of the most controversial figures in all of human history? A man who to this day has his name pronounced by almost more people correctly than almost anybody you could mention as a figure in world affairs. Of course, most people just use his name to curse because they feel that maybe in doing so they can sort of prove to themselves there isn't any God and maybe Christ didn't really rise as he claimed he would. But be that as it may, Jesus Christ of Nazareth made some very shocking predictions. He said, if you will read in your own Bible in the first book of the New Testament in Matthew 24, that famous Olivet prophecy, when he was asked what would be the time, what would characterize the time that he was talking about to his disciples, a time that he kept referring to as the end of the age, the climax at the close, as one modern version has it. He kept talking about massive destruction of cities. He kept talking about the fact he was going to return to this earth. Now, his own disciples didn't really believe it, as you see later, because they said, let's go fishing. They thought everything was over. They thought he was dead and maybe would never rise again. They had to have it proved to them. So they kept wanting to know, well, what will characterize that day? What can we look for? What will be the signals or the signs in world events that would tell us that such a tremendous occurrence as this is near? And Jesus said, you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And he said, there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in different places. Yes, different places, places you have never expected earthquakes to occur before. Now, was that just a good guess? Well, if it was, it was one of the best guesses you've ever heard in all of your life. It was one of the most critical news analyses that has ever been written in all of history, because at the precise moment in world history that Jesus went on to describe, when he talked about a time when it would be literally possible to annihilate all humankind from the face of the earth, because he said in the 21st and 22nd verses of that same chapter, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not from the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor shall ever be. And he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. And as the Moffat Modern English version of that chapter has it, no flesh saved alive. Well, now look, where does that put us in world affairs? We're living in a time right now, precisely at this moment, where it is possible by three separate methods to obliterate humankind. Never before until this space age, this modern era that we live in today. Now finally, it's become very, very agonizingly clear that it is not only possible, but many people are beginning to fear it is probable that humankind could be literally annihilated by three separate methods. And we talk today in terms of overkill, if we talk about hydrogen bomb warfare at all. We talk about gigaton bombs and multi-megaton bombs and anti-missile missiles and so on. It's a fantastic age. Well, here is a Bible prophecy written so many centuries ago that people have ignored and thought, well, he certainly couldn't have known what he was talking about. Certainly the Bible is not for us today, they think. Certainly Bible prophecy has all been fulfilled, hasn't it? And haven't so many people told you, and haven't you thought, that the Bible is just a collection of mythology and of fairy tales and child's Bible stories and pretty much an attempt by one race of people anciently to aggrandize and magnify their national history and sort of make something great of themselves? Isn't it pretty much Hebrew literature? Isn't that what you thought? Well, then how do you explain the fact that Bible prophecy so accurately, so succinctly, so completely labels and identifies this precise moment of world history? How do you explain that? Now, I've been talking about Bible prophecy on the World Tomorrow program for some time, and also the good news, because few people know that Jesus Christ of Nazareth brought some good news beyond it all. That first of all, he warned of these seemingly inextricable and insoluble problems that would affect mankind, and then he gave the good news about the outcome. Now, you know, most people, when they hear the word gospel, that means something completely other than what Christ meant by it. What Christ meant when he said gospel is merely an old English word that got translated. Then a lot of people begin to use it in various ways, and they think that gospel means, well, almost anything that smacks of religion. Anything that is, evangelical in nature. Anything that is religious in nature. They talk about gospel singing, gospel songs, gospel hymns, good gospel books, gospel names. You've heard that, haven't you? I have a great deal. I've seen the word, and it's funny how they always want to print the word gospel in old angelic, or is it, what is it, angelic? Maybe it is angelic, but it's the old Anglican, too, I think, or what is the type style, they call it. But it has all these little various curlicues on it. It looks very religious, kind of like it smacks of stained glass windows and quiet talks by the fireside and peaceful sojourns in a very dark cathedral. It's funny how we sort of like to even make things appear ecclesiastical by tight styles, but this is the way people look at the word gospel. So it's no wonder that very few people seem to realize that when Jesus talked about the gospel of the kingdom of God, he was bringing the good news of a new age, of an era to come, of an age beyond, of the world the way it will be in tomorrow's years, the way this world is finally going to become. So he didn't only give a lot of messages of gloom and doom, but he also predicted the outcome, and he told about the good news beyond, and this is the thing that the average person simply knows nothing of. Now, how much of the Bible have you read? Have you ever read even the book of Matthew? I got a letter from a man who said he decided he would sort of start a little project, and he would read through the New Testament, but he would do it by, first of all, clearing out of his mind any and everything that he had ever thought or known about religion. In other words, he would look at it completely objectively and without bias, and he wouldn't try to interpret what he read, but he would just read it like you would pick up any book, and you'd wonder, what's in there? You hadn't heard the punchline yet. You hadn't heard the conclusion. Nobody told you the story. Nobody had come along and said the butler did it. You simply pick up the book and you start reading it with your mind unfettered from what parents and relatives and neighbors had always told you. He said, you know, I got such a shock. He said, I never realized the Bible said things like that. He said it became clear and the truth was just plain. And here it was, totally different from anything I'd ever read before. I never realized the Bible was understandable like that before. Well, now, have you ever read the Gospels? I don't mean just those books of the Bible that are called the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I mean the entirety of the Gospel, a great deal of it in the epistles of Paul, the so-called general epistles, the book of Hebrews, the book of Revelation, a great deal of the Old Testament has the Gospel in it. That's right. In a sense, David preached the Gospel to Goliath. You may not realize how. Because the Gospel says that God Almighty is the ruler and that God is going to govern and rule this world. And when David went out, he said, who are you, you Philistine think? Well, he didn't say that in that exact language, but he said, who is this uncircumcised sort of a cur out here who says he is able to stand up and defy the armies of the living God? David believed in a living God because he proved him, and he knew he existed. So he sort of preached a little bit about God is the ruler, and God is alive, and God is able to intervene in the course of human affairs, because here were two huge armies squared off, and here was the government and the rulership of a great nation hanging in the balance. And these two champions go out and face each other, and believe you me, if Goliath had won, the Israelites would have run, and the whole course of history would have been different. And so David said, I want to tell you something. He said, the God that I serve is able to deliver you into my hand, and he's going to, and I'm going to take your head off your shoulders. And he went out and did exactly that. But first of all, he prophesied to Goliath, that's what he was going to do, and he had the confidence to know that God was going to back him up. And that God Almighty does intervene to alter the very course of history. Did you know the gospel was a message with a beginning and a body, a conclusion that talks about present day world conditions? You may not have known that. Well, you need to write for these booklets we have for you. One of them is simply about the existence of God. Does God exist and can you prove it? So many people are willing to believe in a sort of a sterile myth that there is no God. They think that agnosticism is in some way intellectual. What is intellectual about saying, I don't know? Can you tell me that? What is intellectual about saying, I can now know almost nothing about this or that subject? That's not intellectuality. That's denying some of the facts that exist. And the Bible throws out the challenge that only the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now, have you ever said that in your heart? A lot of people have written it and said it with their lips. So Jesus Christ really hit the nail right on the head, didn't he? When he described our day, write for this booklet on the proof of the Bible and find out more about Bible prophecy. Now, in the line of that very prophecy that Jesus gave that you can read of in Matthew 24, he talked about earthquakes in different, in diverse, in strange places. Here is a booklet we have for you, absolutely free of charge, on the truth about earthquakes. It's in full color. It tells you what science has discovered in recent dates. Here are full-color pictures of these fantastic earthquakes that have occurred up in Alaska, in Yellowstone, in North Africa, in Chile. Here's a caption that shows how the Alaskan earthquake shocked and wrenched and distorted that earth up there, equivalent to the destructive power of 500,000 times the energy of the atom bomb that destroyed Hiroshima in Japan. Now, scientists and seismologists know that something really big and something ominous is building up inside this earth. And they know that along these major fault lines, which they have recently discovered, bridge the entirety of this earth and crisscross its continents even beneath the seas and along the crust of the entirety of the world in a definite pattern. And they know that great forces and stresses are building up. And they talk about the gigantic earthquakes of the future. This booklet shows you the possibility of earthquakes occurring where you live, and, more important, what does the Bible say about the possibility of future earthquakes? And it's free of charge, it's in full color, and it's in layman's language. There's nothing technical or difficult to understand, yet it's absolutely technically accurate. So write in for it. It further serves to show you that these prophecies of the Bible can't be taken lightly, that Jesus Christ of Nazareth knew exactly what he meant. So here we are in a world of increasing drought and famine, possibly thousands of Indians going to starve this year, next, and the one beyond. Now, the assumption has been that our peoples in the United States and Great Britain, and especially the British Commonwealth, perhaps the great wheat belts in Canada, the cattle raising in Australia, a lot of the farmers and ranchers in South Africa, can feed the world's hungry. But, you know, that is becoming a rather dangerous assumption. I have before me some rather shocking statistics on the international horizon, showing what is happening in South Africa and how people down there were getting so disgusted that crudely lettered signs were being hung on people's fences in drought-ravaged Transvaal on a cattle ranch where cattle were dying, and more than a half a million cattle have died down there. Here was a sort of a harsh little bit of blasphemy hanging on a rancher's sign. No rain, no grass, no God. Nearby was a battered pail hanging from another gate, and a sign above it said, throw your pennies in the bucket so we can buy a pair of spectacles for God that he may see the sufferings of man and beast. Now the point is, when it was nice and green and verdant and fertile and nobody had any problems and ranchers were happy and plenty of cattle were eating plenty of fodder, who was giving God credit for it? Nobody.
But of course, whenever conditions get bad and things begin to go wrong, then of course God gets the blame. So these cries are being lifted up from hearts filled with despair, as thousands of farmers down there are watching their livestock and their hopes grow thin and die as the century's greatest drought, said UPI, devastates southern Africa. Now, our peoples are identified in Bible prophecy, and the predictions are that not only will Asia, Africa, Latin America, and these areas that we like to sit back in our affluency and forget about, but our peoples, our nations, and our countries are going to be affected by drought, famine, pestilence, meaning disease epidemic, earthquakes, these conditions that Jesus Christ of Nazareth predicted. They are going to affect our peoples because our nations are identified in the pages of the Bible. Through history, the historical sections of the Bible, the prophetic sections of the Bible, we are mentioned time and time again. You can prove that by writing for this booklet, The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy, and to see where we're identified. Now, I've been reading in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 in the book of Amos, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Isaiah time and again on this program. Let me show you again what it says back here in Leviticus 26, and this does mean our people. Now, you need to prove that to yourself by writing for this booklet, The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy, the article, Why Prophecy? Why was prophecy written? Why do these chapters of the Old Testament talk about drought, famine, disease, and pestilence, wild animals, and all of these horrible, unprecedented disasters striking our peoples? Why such dire predictions? With whom is God angry? People say, what have I done? Well, the Bible will tell you if you want to look into it. And God tells us in no uncertain terms, over and over and over again. But of course, a lot of us have never read very much of it, so we frankly don't know. We're not living as happily as we should, as happily as we might wish. We wonder why it is that we don't get the breaks, what it is that goes wrong. We'll look into the Bible and find what it is that causes our headaches and heartaches, our fears and worries, our drought and famine, our loss, our failure. Now, that sounds pretty gloomy, doesn't it? Well, you know, I'm willing to look at the facts. I'm not ignoring the fact that there are more people in the United States today employed at higher paying jobs than at any other time in the course of any nation in history. I'm not unaware of that at all. I'm not a bit unaware of our affluency. I'm not a bit unaware of the fact that we're living higher on the hog, as the old farmer says, you know, than we ever have before. I am also, however, not going to blind my eyes because of our fat and gluttia of Asia, of Vietnam, of Indonesia, of the island of Haiti, where 90% of the people suffer with intestinal worms, where 50% of the population has tuberculosis, and where about 4 out of 5 babies die in the first year. Nor will I ignore the Philippines, where every other baby dies before the first year, and where life expectancy is clear down in the 20s somewhere. Nor will I ignore the fantastic conditions in Egypt. 800,000 people a year added to the population, and by the 1970s, more than 1 million a year. So, you know, you begin to look at the overcrowded conditions. Do you realize, and this is a statistical fact I can back up, that if you took every last human being on the face of the earth and put him inside the United States, we would have fewer people per square mile than Egypt does along the Nile? That's a fact. Got it right here in the statistic before me from the Los Angeles Times. You know, Egypt's big problem, it says here in the clipping that I have, is just entirely too many people. So while I do not ignore the affluency of the United States and good times and good jobs and plenty and so on, neither will I ignore the fact that famine, starvation, and drought are the biggest, the most all-consuming, the most overwhelmingly important problems facing mankind. Neither will I ignore the fact that the grain bins in Kansas are growing empty, that our surpluses are dwindling, that our strength is being spent in vain. Now here are the communists chiding and deriding us and saying, send us your men, send us millions of them. We don't care, we can swallow them all up. Yeah, that's right, that's what they're saying. So far we're complying. You know what God said anciently? He said in verse 20 of the 26th chapter of Leviticus, and you shall spend your strength in vain. Now notice here again, real quickly, some of these prophecies where he said, if you will not hearken unto me, I am going to set my face against you, and I will punish you 7 times more for your sins. In verse 19 of Leviticus 26, he said, and I will break the pride of your power. That's what's happened. That's what is happening. Great Britain and the United States are taking it on the shins and the nose and between the eyes. We're getting our cheeks slapped and we're getting our ears cuffed and boxed and we're getting our shins kicked and our noses bloodied around the earth. And where formerly Great Britain could say the sun never sets on the British Empire and sing with great fervency the song there shall always be in England, today people are beginning to wonder. And where the United States formerly had such a tremendous worldwide image, and we sent our fleet around the world on a power cruise destined to show off the might and the importance of the United States fleet, and we had a two-ocean navy, and we were proud of it, and we had about 8 million men under arms at the close of World War II, and we were proud of it, and we emerged the victors, and yet today we find ourselves in a world where every single problem, regardless as to how small or how large, we seem to inherit it immediately. Suddenly it's our problem, and we're the people who have to start worrying about how to solve it. And so we start spending our strength. Not our money. You can't eat money. You can't eat dollars. You can't eat gold. But you can sure enough eat wheat and carrots and vegetables and groceries. And that's what we're sending abroad. We're not sending, well, we're sending dollars too. Sure we are. How many nations are there? 100 and some odd. And we're supporting nearly all of them. And have been for years. God said, I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. And that's the way the heavens look in South Africa. And that's the way the heavens and the earth look in Australia. And that's the way it began to look in the northeastern United States, where severe water shortages were becoming increasingly and painfully evident. And that's the way it's beginning to look in even Southern California, where the water shortage is liable to be a very, very severe problem before another year goes by. On the one hand, we have unprecedented rains. And yet it all runs off so quickly that it doesn't sink into the ground very well. God said, I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield or increase, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruits. In the book of Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, he said virtually the same thing in this parallel prophecy. And back in the book of Amos, he said virtually the same thing. In Deuteronomy 28, he said we would be cursed in the city, in the land, our basket and our store, meaning our national resources and our surpluses, would be spoiled, and they are being spoiled, and they are being depleted and disappearing. And he said, the Eternal shall smite you with a consumption, that's in verse 22 of Deuteronomy 28, and with a fever, and with an inflammation, and with an extreme burning, and with a sword, and with blasting, and with mildew, and they shall pursue you until you perish. And your heaven that is over your head shall be brass, and the earth that is under you shall be as iron. That's a very, very sort of a harsh picture of drought. And the Eternal shall make the rain of your land powder and dust, and it'll come down upon you until you be destroyed. Why? Well, you go back and read the first part of the chapter. He said, if you'll obey my laws, you'll be blessed. You'll be the greatest peoples on earth. The whole world will be benefited because of your wealth and health and industry. Everybody else is going to sort of sit around in the shadow of your greatness and enjoy it with you and get the crumbs that fall from your table, and even they will be rich. He prophesied that eventually all nations would be blessed because of what he was going to do in and through his own people he had called for a special purpose. But we rejected that call. We've forgotten our national identities. Most of us aren't even remotely living next to and close to God. Most of us don't know a thing about the Bible. We pay no attention to God's laws. We want him to sort of give us all the blessings, all right? So here we are, people in South Africa, on the one hand saying, why don't you buy God some glasses so we can see our problem? And on the other hand, going into church to pray for peace. Do you suppose God is going to give them peace and plenty and prosperity, and as they go to pray for rain, that he's going to supply all their rain and water before they take the signs down and before they get that attitude out of their hearts and minds? You people in South Africa ought to think about that, because that's worth thinking about. That's what the Bible talks about. Well, these prophecies are mighty important, and they are occurring today, and they are going to continue to occur just as the Bible said. You need to write for these booklets. Does God exist? The proof of the Bible, the one on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. They're for your charge. No one's going to call on you, and no one's going to send you any follow-up of any kind. Now, also, the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, full color, 52 pages throughout, and especially dealing with Bible prophecy in the light of current events right now, this exact moment of history in which you live. And also write in for this booklet on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like, because here's a booklet that shows you in step-by-step form the real solutions to the biggest problems confronting mankind today. The solutions to the problems of the economy, of burgeoning, exploding populations, the problems of growing racial hatred and intrigue, the problems of political divisions, and the problems of the stockpiling of hydrogen and atomic weapons. And here is a booklet that marches right on out into the future in step-by-step sequence and detail to show you what are the solutions to these problems, the good news beyond. The title of the booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. This booklet, more than anything else, tells you the exact reason for being for this radio program. People oftentimes wonder, well, what is this program? And what do they believe, and what do they stand for, and who's behind it, and who sponsors it, and just exactly what are they trying to get over? This booklet, more than any other piece of literature we could put in your hands, and it's all free, is going to tell you exactly what we believe, what we stand for, what we're trying to do, and here's the whole story of how it's going to come about. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Here are the two widely divergent views of politicians and government leaders and then scientists of what they secretly feel the world tomorrow is going to be like. Many of them feel it won't even be here. And then scientists talk about a wonderful, glittering, sort of a gigantic Disneyland of leisure, of more pleasure and ease and luxury for the few, but more starvation, more riots, more wars, more upsets for the many. But all the way through this booklet, you will see solutions. You will see the predictions about the outcome. You will see present-day trends and conditions in the big countries around this world analyzed and solved. You will see tomorrow's headlines today. You'll see the really big news that is not being reported anywhere else about the way this world is going to be. And included, one of the most fantastic newspapers you've ever read. Sort of a could-be newspaper, the way the world news could be today, and believe it or not, the way it will be in not very many more years. The best news you could read, an article about total disarmament. Articles about the solution to the big problems that everyone worries about today. Solving our economic problems, bringing people out of poverty, solving the racial hatreds and strife of people. Making wasteland productive. Solutions to the problems of weather, solving the problems of divorce, solving the problems of education and school dropouts, what have you. It's all here in this newspaper that is contained inside the booklet. Now, you don't have to ask for it separately. The booklet is entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It compares today's world with tomorrow's and shows you why it needs these solutions and exactly what they are. And there's a complete picture of it given. The exact conditions that will become extant. How we'll finally be totally delivered from the many problems that constantly confront us today. This booklet, as no other does, shows you exactly the meaning and the purpose of this broadcast, The World Tomorrow. That's why it's by the same title. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's free of charge, no price, no one's going to call on you. We don't give your name to someone else. We protect it and safeguard it in our own IBM files. And we'll send it to you immediately upon receiving your request if you'll write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station and write for the booklet immediately. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.